Listen up, MoCast listeners. GoDaddy hosting plans are more powerful than ever. Best of all, plans start at just $3.95 a month. And no matter what plan you choose, your site receives 24/7 maintenance and protection in the GoDaddy.com world-class data center. Plus, as a listener of MuggleCast, enter code RON, that's R-O-N, when you check out and get your .com domain name for just $6.95 a year. Some restrictions always apply, but check that site out for the details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.
This is Professor McGonagall welcoming you all to MuggleCast, hoping you enjoyed. Dobby, come here. Dobby!
Yes, well, I'd just like to say how very pleased I am to introduce MuggleCast to all of you. Thank you.
Because Warner Brothers finally released Half-Blood Prince, this is MuggleCast episode 177 for July 30th, 2009.
Welcome back to MuggleCast, everybody. We're here for our 177th episode. It's kind of lucky, right? Two sevens?
Wow.
That's like double magical.
We'll never reach 777, so...
Oh, you never know.
I don't know. Maybe for fun we can jump 600 episodes.
We'll be 40, but we could do it.
Welcome to MuggleCast.
Yeah.
What episode is this?
MuggleCast, nursing home edition.
It's been a while since we've had a recorded homegrown episode, but we're so happy to be back, and we got Laura here, Micah, Matt, and Mikey, along with me. Hey, guys.
Hey, Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
Yay, podcasting. And this is our first recorded regular episode since the movie release. Thank you for bearing with us as you waited 2 weeks for us to get this one out. But we have a lot to discuss, of course, with the movie. We still haven't heard Matt and Laura, or Matt and Micah's thoughts, and Mikey's thoughts, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I get confused. You three are like Matt, Micah, and Mikey. It's just, I know,
it's amazing.
But you know what, Matt, though? Me and Micah have M-I, you're M-A.
Oh.
You're the odd one.
Out.
He wins.
Shoot.
You're out of our club.
But alphabetically,
you're out of our club,
I'm
Matt.
In front of you two, so doesn't that make me better?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I agree.
I'm the odd man out, I guess.
You want to be as cool as us.
Yeah, can we just call me Mitt?
All right, girls, you're both losers because your name starts with an M, and I am the winner with A. So let's move on. Let's get into the show. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Matt Britton.
And I'm Mikey B.
Michael, we know the big news, of course, is the release of Half-Blood Prince, but has there been any other news to discuss besides that before we spend the entire episode on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously news going on right now because the movie was just released
right.
a couple weeks ago, but let's talk, I guess, a little bit about the numbers that are out there. And according to the most recent numbers that I was able to find, it says that Half-Blood Prince has now made $222 million here in the United States, which is $14 million ahead of where Order of the Phoenix was 12 days after its release. And it's made an additional $405 million internationally, bringing the worldwide total to $627 million.
Wow.
pretty impressive. How does that compare to Order of the Phoenix?
That I don't know, as far as total is concerned.
Give me a second. I'll pull it up. There's a website that I love called boxofficemojo.com.
That's a great site.
I love boxofficemojo.
It's interesting. I mean, a lot of people were thinking, well, is Half-Blood Prince going to make more money because of the delay? You know, there's more hype. There's more build-up. But it doesn't seem like that happened. But could it be because of IMAX being delayed? And it's just coming out today, the day we're recording this Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But do you think that's going to really spike sales?
I don't know. Think so.
Really, Laura?
I know I'm going back again, like 2 weeks later.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely will too.
Like, normally I would see it like a bunch.
But I guess I'm just thinking about the earlier films where there wasn't IMAX and the sales were really good. I mean, obviously the sales have improved each time. I don't know. Yeah. I just, like, most people don't seem very impressed with going to, like, pay $12 to see a movie that has, like, 20 minutes of IMAX footage in it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's almost what a regular ticket costs, too. So, I mean, what's the difference?
Well, depending on where you live. Yeah, it's a little bit more.
Right. But what are the numbers, Mikey?
Opening weekend in general for Half-Blood Prince was $77,835,727. Opening weekend for Order of the Phoenix was $77,108,414. And I did a little calculator. It's only $727,313 more than Half-Blood Prince made opening weekend. Now, again, that's just opening weekend, you know, stats.
That's surprising. So I guess what that says is really the fandom hasn't changed a bit.
Order of the Phoenix also opened up in 4,285 theaters, whereas Half-Blood Prince actually opened up in more with 4,325 theaters. So it does have more theaters, so that makes sense. But again, you'd be thinking that they would make more money with that. You know,
right.
Couple hundred theaters or 100 theaters more.
So what it sort of says is the film sort of still has the same amount of fans. It hasn't grown. It hasn't shrunk. So the big thing with Order of the Phoenix was there was that book coming out right after. Right.
Yeah,
so.
that was a big summer for Harry Potter.
But 12 days into it, though, they're saying that Half-Blood Prince has pulled out in front by 14 million. So it's a little bit different. In terms of what, you know, opening weekend is what Mikey just said, but now the more updated statistics are saying that it's pulled out a little bit further.
Yeah, at the 2 week out, it's definitely further ahead because if you look at the domestic total, like we're almost to the complete domestic total in the U.S. of what Order of the Phoenix made, and we're only 2 weeks in with today being the release of the IMAX, which I can't imagine you being a fan and not wanting to go see IMAX just because it's a completely different experience. It's just awesome. I love IMAX.
I didn't see IMAX with Order of the Phoenix, but it was sort of because I wasn't too happy with the film. But this film, I love. But let me ask you guys about G-Force. This stupid hamster movie, it beat Half-Blood Prince this second weekend. This past weekend, G-Force pulled in like a few million more than Half-Blood Prince. And that blew me away. Like, how could Half-Blood Prince not outperform better than stupid spy hamsters its second week in theaters?
You know, that actually doesn't surprise me. Simply because, like, if you look at the drop off, all right, we just quoted, you know, opening weekend was $77 million, right? The drop off was drastic, you know, the second weekend. It went to like, what was it, 50? I'm trying to find the numbers real quick for the second weekend. What, you know, Half-Blood Prince pulled.
No, I think it was like around 30.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, it's a drastic drop off. Now, you gotta remember that the core fans are not core fans, but a big chunk of Half-Blood Prince's fans are in the same, you know, viewing audience as what G-Force is. Now, we're a little bit older, so. Well, think about it. Like, all the moms and their little kids want to go see Harry Potter.
Yeah.
We're a little bit older. And yes, we're older and G-Force is not as appealing to us, but a good chunk of the people that went and saw Harry Potter the first weekend now went to go see a movie again. They're not going to see Harry Potter again. They're going to go see G-Force. So G-Force definitely had a lot of people coming to it. And of course, I don't know about your theater, but I know G-Force was a preview in my theater saying opening next weekend. So again, you know, you saw Harry Potter the weekend before, and now you know these cool hamsters are coming out next weekend, and you want to have your mom.
They're
take
not
you.
Cool. They are not cool.
I don't know what it says about us though, because while G-Force took the box office here, over in England, Half Blood Prince stayed up at the top. So
yeah,
I guess
okay, the Americans we'll are so know. Inundated with crap.
Yeah, see, this
that
is the country.
Don't go for
Wasn't
hamster movies.
That Beverly Hills Chihuahua movie like number
yes.
one yeah. for some ridiculous amount of time?
Well, they picked a weekend that didn't have much competition. I hope Harry Potter would have beaten Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Well, you never know. It just got beaten by Spy Hamsters.
Oh, I know. I hear you.
Yeah, so well, Flo Rida was in the movie too. He was singing.
Oh,
that totally contributed to it.
That answers it.
Well, let's move on from that. We get it. Half Blood Prince was a great success. What else is going on, Micah?
Well, kind of along the lines of Half-Blood Prince, there was an article done by the New York Times talking about drinking in the movie and its impact or potential impact, I guess, that it could have on children that are underage that are going to see it. And there are a couple of scenes that were mentioned, and I think the first one was actually put in by the director. I don't remember in the book itself Hermione being tipsy after their trip to Hogsmeade. But there was Hagrid, obviously. He passed out in the hut when Harry and Slughorn are visiting with him after Aragog's death. And then also the poison mead that Ron drinks. So
yeah.
A couple instances of alcohol in the movie. But to me, when I was watching the movie, that really didn't strike me at all. I didn't really think much about it. But I guess mothers who are taking their children have a little bit different opinion.
And there were some moms quoted in this article, right?
Yeah. One mother, Liz Pearl, who's a mom of two teenage boys, said that she was bothered by so many scenes showing alcohol as a coping mechanism.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that what alcohol is, though?
Laura, why does that send you off?
Oh, hey, because people... I think, again, this is just an instance of somebody taking this issue and trying to put it up on a pedestal and making a big deal out of it because it's in something that's mainstream. They're just trying to get attention. Mm. It's the same case with Laura Mallory. What they're not considering is, of course, the story is based out of England. And unfortunately for us, we're the only country on this planet that has such a taboo kind of outlook towards alcohol. Everybody else kind of just views it as a casual thing, like, let's go and have a drink.
Good
point. No, not us. We aren't fun.
Although I gotta say, it was kind of surprising when you see Hermione looking a little drunk coming out of coming out of Three Broomsticks. I mean, that made me laugh.
I thought it was funny, but it didn't.
I thought it was cute.
It was funny, but surprising. But what?
I said it didn't bother me. Like I.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't get these people.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, let's not even focus on the violence of the film. Let's focus on the fact that you know there's a little bit of alcohol here and there. But there was another quote. That I think sums it up a lot better. And this woman said, I think the alcohol angle washed over me because of the magical context of the film. This isn't a real school. Real teachers are real students. So it's almost like the drinking isn't real. I wonder how many kids even know what mead is.
That's true. That's true. And it's not like the stuff was that. It wasn't that obvious. Like, when Hagrid falls backwards and hits his head, he could just be tired and falling asleep.
Right.
And Hermione didn't come off too drunk, so it wasn't too over the top. I agree, Laura. They're trying to get attention. We weren't even sure if to post this on MuggleNet. I mean, if this was from, like, a tablet or something, we wouldn't have. But the fact that it was from the New York Times, and, you know, they're not perfect, but...
I think it goes to show that they were having a slow news day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
What else is going on, Micah?
Well, a recent article by Baylor University asks if Harry Potter may have a negative impact on newspapers and journalism. And one of the quotes from the article says, "The books present an unnecessarily pessimistic view of journalism today. Since literature can play an important role in helping children learn and possibly empathize with situations experienced by characters, the potential for influence on journalism is strong." And I assume that it's referring to Rita Skeeter.
Right, and also, It also talks about the stuff with the ministry. It says the analysis finds, the study they did finds an overwhelmingly negative representation of journalism throughout the first six books, raising concerns that child readers will view journalism as corrupt, deceptive, and an unattractive career choice. So yeah, it does focus on Rita Skeeter, and I think a little bit of the ministry too.
Right.
Controlling the Daily Prophet, you know. So, I, what do you guys think about this? I mean, this is from, this is a really interesting study, I thought, from Baylor University. Laura, do you have any opinions on this? Do you think it negatively affects journalism?
No. I think journalism negatively affects journalism.
But, you could argue that if kids who aren't very aware of journalism look at this, or read the books, and...
This is the same thing as before with the drinking. It really is.
Right.
And it's, you know, they're taking one aspect, and same thing with, you know, the Dumbledore, you know, being gay issue. You know, you can take any aspect of any book, not just Harry Potter, and say, oh, it casts a bad light on whatever.
Yeah. They're just doing it for Harry Potter because it's a really popular series.
And it's popular right now because the movie just came out.
Yeah. I still did find it interesting. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me get Laura back in.
I think, though, you have to remember that the story is coming from one individual's perspective, and a lot of times it's how that person is being perceived by the newspaper. And if you notice, there are a number of characters in the series that agree with what's being said in the newspaper about what's going on. And, you know, we've done shows in the past, too, where we've talked about media corruption, government corruption, which is stressed very, very strongly. Even J.K. Rowling has said so in these books. I mean, she's making a point about how the media can act at times and how the government can act at times. And they're very strong suggestions, just like any other, you know, themes that are in the books.
All right. Well, enough with the studies. Enlighten us with some other news, please. Some news that Laura won't get angry about.
Okay. I can't promise she's not going to get angry about this. But one of the other stories, Half-Blood Prince related, the Ultimate Collector's Edition of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets are now available for pre-order on Amazon, and now the online store has revealed the Blu-ray and standard DVD covers.
Yes.
You asked the question, Andrew. Is this a little bit too early?
I don't know. I mean, we know now, and David Heyman said at the premiere that they're going to be doing some Ultimate Collector's Edition once all eight films are out. But I just think it's a little early to be releasing Sorcerer's Stone and Chamber of Secrets Ultimate Collector's Edition. I mean, yeah, it's been almost 10 years, but like, can't you guys see them releasing like Super Mega Ultra Super Plus editions?
Yeah.
Like another ten years from now.
Why would they call it the Ultimate Collection if they're not all out yet? Wouldn't the Ultimate signify that all of them have to be out together?
Well, the ultimate of each one of these films.
Yeah.
Like,
this is the ultimate can't get any better collector's edition DVD.
Yeah, and you know they're going to re-release these.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to do like a 10th anniversary edition.
I'm waiting for the 20th anniversary, you know, special edition version, just like Star Wars, where they're going to go in, add new songs, new dance things. It's going to be just like the Star Wars saga. They're going to have all these different versions, and then they're going to release, you know, 15 years later, they're going to release the definitive remaster. Mastered, perfect edition, and that's the one you're going to want to get. But are you really going to wait 15 years for the whole thing to be done and everything to get it? No. You're going to buy it as you go. And maybe, you know, I know I had all the Star Wars movies on VHS tapes and everything. And finally, when they came out on DVD, I have three different DVD copies of it. And same thing with Harry Potter. I have two copies of a couple of my favorite ones on DVD, and I have a couple Blu-ray versions too. So you're going to end up buying multiple copies, just like I have multiple copies of the books. Mm-hmm. So
It's got to have a lot of stuff on it because it retails for $50, and Amazon has it for sale at $35. But
that's a lot.
$50, I mean that's not a standard Blu-ray price. So I'm wondering what the hell is also going to be on.
Well,
this?
Do you think it might be like what they're doing now with a DVD, Blu-ray, and a digital copy, plus like something else?
Maybe. Yeah. Well, it says right on the cover of year one, the year one box, it says, includes creating the world. So, maybe new interviews about creating Great Hall and all that? Who knows? If it's new interviews, that would make it worth it, but...
I know we said it didn't have anything to do with Half-Blood Prince, but could they be releasing these now because there's the hype surrounding the movie?
Probably. I mean, these aren't even out yet, though. And they don't have set dates. We just have covers. So... who knows what's going on here.
I do like the design of the covers, too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I do like how they're all, like, they have the big number, year one, year two.
Yeah, I like the color scheme where it's blue and then red. Yeah. I want to see what, you know, the next one has.
And the disc, the Chamber of Secrets cover says, includes creating the characters. So, year one has creating the world. Year two has creating the characters. Year three will have creating the random stuff Alfonso comes up with, possibly.
Creating the stuff.
Year four will have creating the director we really didn't like. Why we chose him. How exciting. I can't wait to see those. Okay, Micah, what else? Out with it already.
All right, Wizarding World of Harry Potter update. We got some news today from down in Orlando. A sleuth named Laura Thompson over at the Hideaway Central message boards has unearthed a dozen recent trademark applications made by Warner Brothers Entertainment that appear to be for rides, shops, and restaurants that will be part of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Universal Orlando. And we got a bunch of those names, some of them not surprising, others a little bit interesting. Do you want to go through those names?
Hey, yeah, give us a preview. What are we going to be calling these things?
The rides supposedly are Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey, which
sounds like an Indiana Jones movie.
Maybe that's just a place. I have a feeling that one's just a placeholder. They couldn't name it something that corny.
Oh, well, they think that's going to take place in the castle itself. Yeah.
Oh my god!
All right, Flight of the Hippogriff.
Ooh. That sounds like a roller coaster.
Dragon Challenge, which they think is going to be the roller coaster.
The Dragon Challenge?
Yeah. There's already an existing ride, Laura. I think you've talked about this before. The Dueling Dragons ride. And they're just going to retheme it.
Yeah, pretty much. They already have two giant dragons built outside of it, too. So I think...
So what?
Is it a good ride?
It is a really good ride. It is good, so...
Are we thinking they're going to take the dragons from Goblet of Fire and use them?
I think that they might just remodel the ones they already have to make them look more Harry Potter-ish.
Do you think like the Flight of the Hippogriff might be like the Flying Dumbo ride at Disneyland?
Well, that's what I'm thinking, because there's actually like in that section of the park, there's a kid's roller coaster called the Flying Unicorn. So when you said that, that's what I thought of. I was like, oh man, seriously.
No, I hope it is. That would be so much fun. Like, can you imagine, like, climbing into a little hippogriff and going around? Like, I really want it to be not like, just like Dumbo, where you can go up and down. It'd be so much fun.
I want thrill rides.
Yeah, but I want rides where I can take photos and goof off and have fun. I think the Flight of the Hippogriff, which is my Dumbo with,
as long as they sell shirts that say, I survived the Flight of the Hippogriff, then...
That would be so awesome. Come on. If it's like Dumbo, I survived this crazy ride.
I think I'm kind of with Andrew. I'd rather be in, like, a little plastic a hippogriff and then fall, like, free-falling, like, 500 feet with the hippogriff.
Yeah, like Tower of Terror.
Yeah,
like it's Tower of Astronomy or Astronomy Tower of
Dumbledore's
Terror.
Dumbledore's death. Oh my god!
Oh my god! Yeah, like right before the first big fall,
you see a big green light and then you drop. Yeah.
No, you hear Sirius please or Severus please, and then they just try.
As soon as you fall down, you hear a Vaticadabra.
Let's go to Universal with that.
Yeah, you hear Avada Kedavra, and it's a green flash, and that's when they take your picture, and that's when you fall.
Yes.
So it's a green flash, so you're tinted green as you're falling.
What? We should work for Universal.
We should.
We need to propose some of these ideas. Let's come up with some proposals. Okay, well, Micah, I believe there's some last-minute news to discuss as well, or one last piece of news to discuss.
And last piece of news here, some Deathly Hallows filming to update on. We posted not too long ago that filming got underway for what looks to be part of the Seven Potters chase scene. But what's odd about it is it looks like they're filming it on the ground and it's supposed to be taking place in the air.
What?
That's upset a lot of people. these photos. Now, the thing to keep in mind is that this doesn't mean the whole journey is going to be on the ground. Maybe this could be like, I don't know, like the beginning of it, and then they'll go up in the air or something.
Or maybe they've thrown in some random battle that didn't exist in the book.
Yeah. I'm just thinking that, like, you know, if, assuming they are going to film the flying scenes, we're not going to see them filming these anyway, because they have to do them inside studios. and there won't be, you know, paparazzi in there shooting that. So, I think people shouldn't worry.
The other weird thing is they're driving against traffic. So that leads me to believe they're going to be using this in the film at some point.
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice that. Man, that's going to add some extra fun, some extra thrills. It's like he made a wrong turn or something.
We're going the wrong way.
And there's some shots of Harry, like, turning back and casting spells, so... it's interesting, interesting. A little worrying, but...
It's probably going to be similar to Order of the Phoenix when they were on the Thestrals flying back, and they went through London.
London, mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other Deathly Hallows news?
Yeah.
Mike R.?
Bill Nye was cast as Scrimgeour during our...
Yeah.
During our time off, and says he starts filming next week in his role. Oh. So that should be cool.
To be honest, did anybody not see this coming?
I didn't know who Bill Nye is, but apparently everybody really? Loves
yeah.
him.
You've never seen like Pirates of the Caribbean?
I have, but I didn't. Who does he play?
He's Davy Jones.
It's a remarkable likeness.
What about Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah, that too. Ooh. And
Love Actually.
Hot
I haven't
Fuzz.
Seen that.
Hot Fuzz, come on.
Mm-hmm. Underworld.
Oh, okay, sorry. I'm not up on my film. Stop hating on me. I can just develop Harry Potter rides. That's all I can do.
Avada Kedavra.
Yeah.
Flash!
Now, I just wanted to say, Severus, please. And then we just fall at the speed of light. And you see, like, you see Dumbledore's body going down with you in front of you.
Oh, man, that's awful.
That'd be so cool.
How would that be cool?
Oh, it's because I love the Tower of Terror at Disney, and that's a... That's
but you want to see some guy plunging to his death while you're going down with him?
Yeah, it'd make it extra scary. It's quite a thrill.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Anyway, go on, Micah.
And the last piece of Deathly Hallows news is just that Tom Felton has been filming for the past few weeks. That's about all I got.
Yes. Yeah, well, that guy, he's a big Twitter user, and he's been Twittering to all his fans that he's been filming, and he keeps talking about getting his hair bleached, and he keeps saying that the scenes are fantastic, so he's really getting everyone excited, I must say. Yeah. All right, so is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I just wanted to add one thing, because we didn't really talk about it for the Wizarding World, the names of the different shops and restaurants, but they're pretty obvious, I guess you could say. There's nothing really that anybody didn't expect.
Yeah, that's true. You want to run through them real quick?
Sure. Shops are Dervish and Bangs, Honeydukes, Ollivanders, Zonko's, and a place called Owl Post.
Can you mail letters there, you think?
Yeah, just mind yourself while walking. Because I'm sure there's a lot of and restaurants, Three Broomsticks, something called Magic Neep, and Butterbeer. I'm not a big fan of the last two.
Wait,
I think
they're
been
calling
a, bit more
a restaurant Butterbeer?
For right now, it's tentative, I guess. I hope they change
maybe
that.
Maybe it's a bar.
Maybe it's a vendor.
Yeah, maybe it is. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. What if it's just a vendor? Like
on
one of the sidewalks or something? Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Micah. You are a wonderful news anchor, and we love having you here.
All right, goodbye. I'm out of here. I'm done for the day.
Time for some announcements. We like to remind you guys about all the stuff going on in the MuggleCast world. Don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. That's podcastalley.com. We appreciate your vote over there because it helps us get noticed within the podcast community. And, of course, we're at the end of July here, so, you know, give us a little bump at the end of July, but also vote for us in August. Since August is right around the corner. Also, we were at Azcatraz last week in San Francisco. Mikey wasn't there, but and Micah, for that matter. But
sorry.
Laura, Matt, and I were. It's not okay. No, but we had so much fun meeting the fans, right, guys?
Yeah, it was a really great convention. So many new people, too. New convention goers.
Yes, I love meeting new people. And it was great. And some people we've seen there before. And Eric was there, too, as well as Elisa, who's been on MuggleCast a few times. So, all in all, it was a lot of fun. And we did a leaky mug with our friends at Pottercast. We did a panel on how to podcast. And we did a MuggleCast meetup. All three events were very well attended.
Yeah.
So thank you so much to everyone who showed up and purchased a t-shirt to help us support the show. Keep an eye. We still have MuggleCast t-shirts for sale from Azcatraz because we didn't sell them all. And we still want to sell them. So I think what we're going to try to do is sell them through the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want a t-shirt, keep an eye on MuggleCast.com over the next week or so. And we'll post details on how to get a shirt if you didn't attend Azkatraz, but you still want one. Because we do want to sell them. So, and we'll probably sell them for between like $15 and $20, including shipping. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So keep an eye on MuggleCast.com if you're interested, and we can hopefully get you hooked up with a shirt. We had this wonderful designer, Stephanie Falcos. She's a fan, or she's a listener of the show, and she made these great designs for us, and we can't thank her enough for this.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Okay, and last but not least, our four-year anniversary is actually approaching here on MuggleCast. We started the show August 7th, 2005. That's when our first episode came out. So 4 years ago, right around now, Ben, Kevin, and I were planning the show. And we were like, how are we going to do this? And we were watching Laura complain in the forums that she wanted to be on, and we were ignoring her.
Yeah.
So.
Jerks.
Love you.
Sexist pigs.
So we're going to put out another episode, episode 178, maybe within the next 1 to 2 weeks, and we'll talk a lot about, you know, the show over the past 4 years. So we'd like you guys to send in your favorite memories of the show and how you use and listen to MuggleCast. Just email in, like, you don't have to email in specific clips, but, you know, just tell us, you know, what, how you've enjoyed the show over the past four years. You know, they could be chicken soup-ish or whatever. And, we'll read some of those on the next episode, and we'll talk about 4 years of MuggleCast. It's pretty insane to think we've had four solid years now, and we'll be entering our fifth year of MuggleCasting. It's pretty solid.
That's
insane.
Ah! Yeah. That's kind of awesome.
It doesn't hurt, Matt.
I was excited. Sorry.
Oh.
This is excited, yo. Can't you tell the difference?
Yeah.
Not sort of.
I can.
Okay, that's enough for announcements. So, let's get into some Muggle Mail. And this is all about Half-Blood Prince, because everybody's Half-Blood Prince crazy right now. Laura, can you read the
crazy
first one?
Sure.
Crazy. Hey.
The first one comes from Christina Funes, age 21, of Honduras, and she writes, "Hey guys, love the show, you guys are great. I just saw the movie yesterday, and even though I really liked it, and I do think it's the best one yet, I was a little disappointed about certain scenes that were included in the movie, and certain scenes from the book that weren't. I just thought the whole scene with the burrow burning could have been eliminated, just because it didn't really make any sense, and instead they should have shown the whole battle at Hogwarts between the students and the Order against the Death Eaters. I think the battle is so important in the book, and there was no mention of Bill being attacked by Fenrir, so I was wondering what they're going to do with Bill on the 7th, because they have to include the wedding."
What do you guys think of this scene?
Honestly, I mean, didn't think it was really necessary.
I think it was. And I'm going to take probably the side most people won't agree on this one, just because I got into the series through the movies initially. And I think that scene was really important because it really brought about the dread. Because, like, the burrow, you know, you already saw Molly. You know, she was the mothering type. And just looking at it from a movie perspective, not a book perspective at all, Molly was kind of something that parents and even kids can relate to, because it's like their mom. And they're having their house destroyed and being scared. That really puts you in a state of fear of what's really going on. Because think of the book. The book really is not that scary. It's all about Draco and the, you know, the Half-Blood Prince, you know, potion book and, you know, everything that's going on. You really don't see Voldemort much in the book itself. It's really very isolated to what's going on with, you know, at Hogwarts. You know, Harry's learning a lot about Voldemort, but you don't see a lot of what's going on outside. And by having them destroy the burrow, you get a sense of fear of what's going on in the world around, which without that, I don't think they could have portrayed in the movie by going with what's in the book. Now, we knew, because again, the book, but that scene, it was very critical to kind of explain that.
That's basically what David Barron, one of the producers, said at the junket. He said the trio are always reading about the fear, but we wanted them to experience it. So this was their way of making them experience all the trouble going on around them. So I personally wasn't too much of a fan of the scene either. Micah, what did you think of the scene?
I kind of agree with Mikey. I didn't really have a problem with the scene. I thought it fit only because, like you just said, they were trying to strike that balance, and they did a really good job of it. Obviously, you had the opening attack on London early on, and then I think they wanted to kind of continue that throughout the course of the movie to as a build up to what was going to happen at Hogwarts. But I didn't really see that much of an issue with it. I know a lot of people had a problem with it. But kind of the other part of her question too, you know, talking about Bill and the wedding that's supposed to happen in the seventh movie, I think that that's going to be there. I don't think it's as critical that they showed him being attacked by Fenrir Greyback, though. I think that's kind of one of those things they can leave out.
Yeah. I mean, they never even put in the movie that Fenrir Greyback was even a werewolf.
Yeah, he was just kind of hairy. the way that I felt about this scene was it was a really great scene to behold. I mean, just really well put together. It was wonderful to watch. I don't think I would have missed it had it not been there. The only problem I have with it, though, is that when you really start to pick it apart, there are certain things that really don't make logical sense. And these are things that were actually brought up by a lot of fans, like the fact that Harry goes running and all they do is just go, "Harry, no!" Like, they don't do anything. And then these, like, spots open in the fire magically for Harry and Ginny to go running through. Mm-hmm. But these other more practiced wizards can't get through the fire.
Magical spots. So I mean, you know, you can't let Dan actually jump through fire. That'd be insane.
Yeah, that would be too much of a stunt.
One thing about Greyback, though, that I thought was interesting, and I don't know if anyone else caught it, I thought Lupin, when he first walked outside into the night, like, I thought he could smell Fenrir Greyback.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of like something mm-hmm. that the director put in there that maybe not everybody would get if you hadn't read the book.
Mm-hmm. Like, cause,
yeah, that's true. That was very subtle.
He was definitely sensing something. Like, he could smell, he knew what he was smelling.
Yeah. It was funny when Tonks was like, "Oh, it's always worse right before the full moon, or
the first phase."
Well, she
always
was like, "The first night of
oh, right."
She said, "The first night of the cycle is always the worst."
Yeah, that's
that was. Yeah, you could be a little immature with that.
Oh,
statement,
we totally were.
That line.
It's his time of the cycle.
His time of the month.
Oh, poor Lupin. Okay, this next email. Every once, I wanted to read this because this was funny. It's sort of like a, huh? Or, huh? I can't do it anymore. I'm too old for this. But every once in a while, people think that we're WB, like MuggleNet and MuggleCast are Warner Brothers. And so sometimes people ask, like, if they can audition for the movie and, like, you know, like, they direct it as, like, "Dear WB" when they're writing to us. But anyway, this one came in, just the other day. "I have no idea why you waited so long to release The Half-Blood Prince. It was very disappointing and most awful. The movies before it were very entertaining and followed the books better. What happened? If there is going to be a follow-up with the next movie, I hope you go back to the standards you set in the beginning. This one was really awful. It is really sad when you come out of a theater and there are other people speaking their disappointment as well. Well, just thought you should know that this one was terrible compared to the other Harry Potter movies. Even the kids wanted to know what happened." And this is from Patricia Moore.
Even the kids wanted to know what happened?
I have a hard time, like, you know, feeling bad for people like her when she doesn't even know, like, that we're not WB. It's kind of weird.
There's a K in terrible.
Poor Patricia. Yeah, not too good of a speller.
And there's a zero.
Yeah, so just so everyone knows, we're not WB. Yeah, she's spelled compared with a zero. Come zero aired.
Well, you know. Yeah, I can understand people being upset. I'm trying to look at the good here, okay? I always do. I can understand people being upset. You know, I haven't given my feelings on Half-Blood Prince yet, which we'll get to later, but I think definitely it's, I kind of find it odd that she says this is a lower standard, because personally I feel this is significantly better than Order of the Phoenix for a wide range of reasons, but,
me too. And we'll get into that more later. Matt, can you read the next email?
Okay. Okay, so our next email comes from Ronnie15 from New Jersey. And Ronnie writes, "Hey, MuggleCasters. Huge fan of the show. I was just wondering what you guys thought of the whole Snape teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts scenario. During Dumbledore's speech, he announces Snape as the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, and the Great Hall breaks out in whispers. But that was it. the fact that Snape had finally gotten the teaching position that he'd been after since he first started working at Hogwarts only seemed to matter for 30 seconds, and then nobody cared anymore. I think by showing Snape's classes actually in progress, moviegoers would be able to see more of his bitterness towards Harry rather than just seeing him being a jerk around Hogwarts. What do you think? Does the film do Snape's character any justice without showing him actually teaching, or could there have been more? Anyway, you guys are totally awesome, and Matt, your red shoes make me smile. Keep up the awesomeness.
I assume she's friends with you on Facebook, otherwise I don't know how she would know such a thing.
I wear red Vans, by the way. Those are my favorite shoes ever.
You're so hip.
They're cool. Okay, you can't deny Vans are awesome.
One thing I really enjoyed about like the first two movies is that you do see a lot of classroom interaction, and yeah, I think it was a time constraint thing, as 99% of the things going on in these films are. So I don't know. I missed it, but then again, I don't think they needed to put much emphasis on Snape being Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. I mean, they had the moment. Dumbledore noted that he's the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher now. Obviously, so Slughorn taking potions made sense. But I don't think they had to put too much on it. And seeing the potion class in Half-Blood Prince was nice, too.
Yeah, it was a good scene.
I also kind of thought that Snape's character did get enough development just because they showed his interactions with Draco and Dumbledore. And I think those things were far more important than his classroom presence.
True. Yeah, I mean, Rodney was bringing up the whole point, I guess, about just Snape's hatred towards Harry, which we really didn't see in this movie too much.
Well, I think
also
so.
Also missing something.
You just know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been built up already.
You get a lot of it in the prior films, though, and you can sense how he really feels about Harry from that. I don't really think you needed it in this movie, even though you kind of have that battle going on in the book between Harry and Snape, because Harry is supposed to be this great Defense Against the Dark Arts student, and now he's kind of going head-to-head with Snape in the classroom.
Yeah, yep. Okay, next email. Micah, could you read that? The final one for today.
Final email comes from Lara, 21, of Texas. And she says, "Hey, MuggleCast, what did you guys think of the opening scene of Half-Blood Prince? Personally, I thought the whole thing with Harry flirting with that waitress was really out of character. My first thought was, when I saw that scene, was that Harry would never do that. I know they did that scene as a way to open the film without the Dursleys, but for me, the way they had Harry act was extremely off-putting. He just doesn't act like that. Your thoughts? Also, why didn't the pictures in the Daily Prophet move? Other than that first scene, I loved the movie and thought it was a good interpretation of the book. I'd love to hear what y'all think."
My only problem with this scene was that I don't think Harry would be sitting in a Muggle cafe reading a wizard newspaper. That was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I mean, come on, he's a 16-year-old boy. Of course he's going to notice a pretty girl.
And the other weird thing was the pictures in the newspaper stopped moving. When she came around. And that doesn't happen in the books, right? They keep moving. Because she was like, "I swore, I just saw one of them move."
I don't think she says it about today, but she says, "I swear, you know, I saw one move like a while ago." Like, you know. Because it sounds like Harry's been to that shop a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
She says, like, the other day.
I gotta be honest. Well, the first time I saw the film, like, I guess my brain needs to, like, transition between the American accent and the British accent, because that entire scene, I sat there saying, what are they saying? Because they were like mumbling in their British accent, and my brain hadn't adjusted yet to understanding the accent. I literally could not understand the entire scene.
Wow.
You're so uncultured, Andrew.
I know,
is
exactly.
Is that more sad
you
than
took the
funny?
Words right out of my mouth, Laura.
Maybe I was just awestruck at seeing the movie finally, but it was just like, I don't know, I literally could not understand it. I was just like, what are they saying?
I thought leaving the Dursleys out was a big mistake.
I agree.
Me too.
And I think they could have done a really good job with it, that whole scene between, you know, Dumbledore and especially Petunia.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's classic Dumbledore, too. In the beginning there. It would have been great to see that.
Well, maybe we'll see it in the next movie. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, enough with emails. Let's get into our discussion of Half-Blood Prince. There's so much to talk about, and we're all really excited to finally get down and dirty with it. Let's just go around and get quick initial reactions from everyone. And we'll start with Matt and Mikey, since we haven't heard theirs yet. And I guess we haven't heard Laura's yet either, because the leaky mug hasn't been released yet. Sorry. So, Laura, let's start with you. What are your general thoughts of the film? Tell us, what did you think of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince?
I have to say, first off, that I haven't actually genuinely appreciated one of these movies as a film since I saw Prisoner of Azkaban. So this movie was a nice treat for me, because I walked out of the theater automatically just like, wow, this was a great movie. They did such a good job kind of condensing the story, but also keeping true to the spirit of the books. It, along with Prisoner of Azkaban, had a lot of things that weren't canon, a lot of things that weren't in the books. They definitely did take some liberties, but I thought all of the liberties they took were keeping sort of in spirit with the books. And I really appreciated it. Also, the foreshadowing was outstanding. I feel like for once in our lives, they actually realize there's another book that comes after the story they're telling. So they did a lot of foreshadowing, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah.
My initial reaction was I liked it. I was a little worried going into it, because I didn't like Order of the Phoenix that much. Like, I liked the film, but it was probably my least favorite out of all of them. And that was mainly because of David Yates. You know, I didn't feel he was a very strong director.
Yeah, yeah.
And before Order of the Phoenix, he had done mostly television for like the past 7 years. But I do think Warner Bros. Did a great job deciding to keep him for the rest of the films, because you can see how much he's grown as a director in the film. Like, this is a much, much better film, and I'm excited to see him and his, you know, and his, you know, Deathly Hallows, both, you know, part one and part two. Like, I really am happy that he's doing both of those. So the film, you know, I was worried about it going into it, and I walked away satisfied. There's a whole lot, you know, we've kind of touched on, you know, the Dursleys not being in it, the whole battle at the very end with the Order of the Phoenix. You know, there's a lot of stuff missing. But I was still happy. Like, I left it enjoying the film. So,
Overall, the first time I saw it, I really, really enjoyed it. The second time, I think I enjoyed it even more. The third time, I think I still liked it.
Wow.
Showing
off how many times you like saw
honestly, it. Honestly, though, I think what I was most pleased with was with what Laura said. The fact that, you know, the foreshadowing was great. I think it made a big difference, because they actually know what happened in the next book. Like, this is the first movie where the series is actually over with, and they know what's going to happen at the end, so it's easier to foreshadow what's going to happen. So they know what to keep in. I thought the acting was pretty much the best in all the previous films. Jim Broadbent was hilarious in it, and I even think Dan was even a lot more funnier in this film than he was before.
More funny.
Funnier.
Yes.
Yes. But the pacing was really good, too. I think that's why I didn't really get tired while watching it, since it was a longer movie. But I thought the pacing was awesome.
Micah.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what's been said already. I think there was good balance also between the comedy and the action and the romance that was in there, I guess. And it just did a great job compared to, I guess, Order of the Phoenix, but really all the other movies that came before it. I thought, for me, it was my favorite movie so far, and that's really all I have to say. I mean, everyone else made pretty good points.
Yeah, I won't be redundant either. I mean, I basically echo everyone's sentiments. Do you guys think, and we don't have to spend much time on this because we've beaten it to death, the rating... everyone was surprised when it got a PG rating. Do you think it deserved the PG rating? I'm going to go right out there and say, simply put, yes, it deserved the PG rating, because it was a lot of romance, and it really balanced out the darkness and made it very family-friendly, I thought.
Yeah, and also, there were some scenes they were very cautious with some of the violence, particularly the beginning with the bridge. You notice everybody managed to make it safely off the bridge.
right.
And then, of course, there's the whole thing with Draco, where he's... I mean, he definitely bleeds, but, like, I think... I don't remember who brought up this point, but, like, the spell cuts his skin but not his shirt, so you don't actually see any of the wounds. You just see blood. So they were very cautious with some of the violence, I think, this time around.
I think it's fair to say that was the most gory scene.
Yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty nasty seeing that blood, you know, flow into the water.
Oh, totally.
What I was going to ask was, what do you guys think the most darkest, like, scariest scene? What was the scariest scene?
Katie Bell.
Yeah.
You think
that was
so?
Pretty freaky, yeah. But
that really, or, I don't know.
Or the Inferi.
When I saw that in the when I saw the Katie Bell thing in the trailer, I thought it looked really weird. I thought it looked like something from The Grudge, and I still thought that when I saw the movie. I was like, "What is this?"
Yeah.
Well, she's cursed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like out of the ordinary.
But it
for
wasn't
anybody.
Scary. It was. It looked really fake.
Well, was she supposed to like turn her head 360 degrees and then just start spitting
pea soup? No, but I mean, just like, the mouth thing. Like her mouth was just unnatural. Like I don't know. It just looked very odd. I thought.
I think I agree. A couple of you guys said the Inferi. I think that was the most shocking, and that was the scariest moment because. You knew they were going to come out of the water, but you didn't know when. You know, it's that classic movie trick they do on you. And the funny thing about it in Half-Blood Prince was that you thought you knew when it was coming, but it was like a half second later than you expected. So that's really what shocked everyone. And it's one of those moments where the entire theater, like, shakes to life.
Oh, God.
Like,
it was so like, fun to watch, too. Especially if you knew it was coming.
You also got to remember that the Inferi, if we're calling the Inferi the scariest part right here, that would bump it to like a PG-13 rating. Like, that's the same. The Inferi looked very similar to, you know, they're not identical, but very similar to like Pirates of the Caribbean when they went through the moonlight. The same thing, this very scary, dead, you know, type look. So, like.
You know what? I was thinking, actually, Mikey, the Inferi look sort of like the Dead Marshes from Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
Well, that's what I was thinking, but I'm comparing it. Well, Lord of the Rings is not PG-13, or PG. Is it? Yeah,
oh,
I'm comparing
right.
this.
No,
yeah,
it's PG-13.
But I'm thinking, comparing it to like Pirates of the Caribbean, a Disney film that is PG.
It's PG-13.
Is Pirates of the Caribbean PG-13? I thought it was PG.
No, I think it's PG-13.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I'm probably wrong. Of course I am. I'm going to look it up. I could have sworn it was PG.
The only other thing would be Dumbledore's death, and that really wasn't even, you know, graphic.
It wasn't gruesome.
I don't know. I thought they played that down a bit from the book. I mean, in the book you have Dumbledore sort of laying there, and this description of how he's sort of at odd angles because clearly he's broken several bones by falling, and there was like blood trickling out of his mouth in the book and all this other stuff, but in the movie it was very clean, you know.
Yeah. Well, didn't it say he looked like a rag doll?
Yeah.
No.
It was just sad in my opinion. Yeah.
Andrew, didn't you interview someone? I can't remember who it was, but they said that they were shocked that the MPAA gave it a PG rating.
Heyman was. I mean, David Heyman, the producer, he was pretty shocked when. He was like, "What the hell is this?" So, but I get it now. Like, it makes sense to me. And as corrupt as the MPAA are, it's just, you know, a parents like rating movies. I think that it made sense. It was a very happy film. At the same time, it was a very sad and dark one. But I think the happiness really turned it into more of a family film, the love stuff, like I said earlier.
Well, I think it could have gotten PG-13 for some of the suggestive stuff that was done in those scenes as
definitely.
Well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm on the fence at this point.
I was wrong about the Pirates of the Caribbean. It was PG-13, of course.
How dare you, Mikey.
I know. I don't do my homework before I come on the show.
Okay, well, there are a couple new characters as well that we should definitely talk about, most notably Jim Broadbent as Slughorn and Jesse Cave as Lavender Brown. Let's start with Jim Broadbent. What do you guys think of Jimmy Boy?
He was brilliant.
I love Jimmy.
What were your favorite scenes with him?
Oh, man. I really enjoyed the memory scenes with Tom Riddle.
Yeah.
Those were just awesome.
I think overall those scenes, the memory scenes, were particularly my favorite. Jim Broadbent was awesome, and also the guy who plays teenage Tom Riddle, he was fantastic.
Yeah, he was so creepy. Oh my God.
Yeah, and he was so smooth and so elegant, and oh, it was awesome.
So Voldemort.
I liked him better than Christian Coulson. Whatever
Me
his
too.
Name is.
Yeah, that's right. Christian Coulson is a joke compared to this
guy.
He's just creepier, and he filled the role more. It was just, you know, really pleasantly surprising seeing these new characters really stand out. Anything else to say about Jim Broadbent? Any other favorite scenes?
I think it was really funny at Aragog's funeral.
Yeah, that too.
Was the story that he told about Lily, was that in the books or was that added
into
the film?
No, it wasn't. But that's
I like
just,
that story.
Yeah, that
a
was
lot.
Just another thing that I really thought was in keeping with the spirit of the story. I thought that was really well done.
Totally.
You know what I really liked about Jim Broadbent, though, is that when you look at him physically, he's not Scrimgeour. Or not Slughorn. I'm sorry, too many S names.
Yeah.
He's not Slughorn, but in character, he is. He just nailed it.
Yeah. And I think when the first photo of Slughorn came out, I remember people saying, well, he's not fat enough, or he's not plump enough.
Well, that reminds me a lot of what they said about Imelda Staunton, too, when she played Umbridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they both nailed it.
But hey, what do you... I mean, yeah, it doesn't really matter. Okay, so what do you guys think of Jessie Cabe? I thought she really stood out, too. She played Lavender Brown.
I thought she was great, too.
She was really good. She depicted the whole teenage angst love relationship in, like, high school.
She was just the right amount of annoying.
Yep.
Like, really? Like, in the books, Lavender annoyed me. In the movie, she annoyed me, but she was just enough to where I didn't, like, hate her. It was like, okay, she's annoying. She's what I expected.
But her face after they broke up was priceless when they were in the Great Hall.
that was great.
She's like, I'm going to scratch your eyes out.
Yeah. And my favorite was the hospital wing when Slughorn, Dumbledore, and Snape are in there, too. And just seeing the three of them watching all this drama go on, I thought was so funny.
Yeah.
And, like, they obviously have so many better things to be doing, but they're sitting there watching
that. But Dumbledore had the best quote, too.
Yeah.
Oh, to be young and to feel love's king sting.
Yeah. There's so many quotes from this movie.
Yeah.
I love the quote now. Like that and...
Well, actually, while we're still on the whole hospital wing scene, did you guys think of it as a really great little treat that we got to see Madame Pomfrey again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was nice. She had a nice little cameo. Mm-hmm.
She didn't say anything, but she was still there.
It's okay.
So they got this woman into full costume just so they could have one shot with her in it.
Hey, it's all about detail.
And it was
Laura.
Two shots, Laura.
She was the wand scene at the end.
Yeah, the wand light vigil.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Okay, so they used her. They used her enough. Moving along, Michael Gambon. Now, this has always been a big discussion point on our show. I hear Mikey's groan, but I personally feel Michael Gambon redeemed himself in this film. He was fantastic!
He was really good.
Now, Mikey, let's hear your problem.
I won't say he was fantastic, but he definitely improved.
Okay, good.
He definitely improved. I still didn't feel the connection to him that I did in the books. Like, you know, I've said it before in the book. When I got to Dumbledore's death, when I read the book, I threw the book across the room and I stopped reading for like 5 minutes. And then I had to finish up.
I thought you were going to say 5 days.
Yeah, no, it was like 5 minutes.
Okay.
I went and got a drink of water afterwards. I was upset. But it may have been Kool-Aid or something. Who knows? Honestly, I didn't feel the connection to Michael Gambon. He did improve a lot. Like, again, going back to, you know, his best film, I feel, was what people consider to be the worst one, which was Prisoner of Azkaban. Just because he kind of was fleety, like, he's like, you know, I don't know what you're doing. You know, even though he knew the time turn and stuff like that. And, you know, in Goblet of Fire, it's like, Harry, did you put, you know, that there? And then again, in Order of the Phoenix, just the amount of, I don't know. He did a great job for this movie. He did a much better job, and I think he did a good job for him, but I think he could have done a much better job. I don't know. I just, it's one of those things where I still wasn't completely satisfied, but at the same time, I don't ever think I would be completely satisfied with Michael Gambon as Dumbledore, and I don't think they should change him at all.
I gotta say, what I liked most about Michael Gambon playing Dumbledore in this movie is that he got rid of the whole cranky Dumbledore.
Yeah, it was a weak Dumbledore this time.
And do you guys honestly think it helped the fact that Dumbledore was gay?
No, okay,
that's what I've been reading a lot on Twitter and stuff. It's because, like, they say that he got a little more sensitive side.
But so. It's because of all the drama that was going on. Being gay or not, he doesn't have to be more sensitive. That doesn't mean you're more sensitive. I think that Michael Gambon knew. He hasn't read the books, but Michael Gambon knew Dumbledore was struggling in this film. He was becoming weak because of his hands, and he was about to die, and he wanted to be careful with Harry. And also, I think the producers just told him, this is a weak Dumbledore in this book, and you see that so much in the book. Poor old weak Dumbledore. That was a big theme leading up to his death. And so that's what I think happens. And I'll give my thoughts on Michael Gambon now, besides what I said before. I think the Harry and Dumbledore relationship, and Mikey, I want to say this specifically to you, really made Michael Gambon stand out in this role, because he really connected with Harry. When he talked to Harry seriously, he was very calm and collected, and that's what redeemed Michael Gambon for me.
No, like I said, he did much better, and it's not that I didn't like him, it's just I don't think he's as good as – he's not what Dumbledore – could have been to me. You know what I mean? Like, I had a much more stronger connection to Dumbledore while reading the books, and it's just been, like, downhill with Gambon. And honestly, in this movie, I thought he was the best he's ever been.
Yeah.
Really. You know, he really has redeemed himself a lot. I just don't think he's, you know, great in it. And it's one of those things where, again, you know, a perfect example is, you know, Harry, I need you to get this memory. It's like, there was no connection. I didn't feel there was a connection there. And like, what really is like, Harry's like, well, Dumbledore says I have to do it. And it's like, whereas before, it's like, he already, you really didn't understand at that time why you needed that memory. Whereas in the book, Dumbledore had laid it out on the table, and he said, "Harry, this is what's going on, and you are the only."
But
person
that's what keep people on the edge of their seat. I think wondering why Dumbledore needed these memories so bad, and I think it was clear that Dumbledore didn't really know either. He said that Dumbledore said, "I need to know what Slughorn really said, and it was a modified dream. It wasn't real."
Yeah, I know, I agree, but it's just one of those things, like Harry agreeing to Dumbledore, like especially how he was, again, I'm looking at the books and the movies, how he was treated in the book before, you know, in Order of the Phoenix, to Dumbledore, like, you know, it's, you know, there really wasn't a strong apology, you know, at the end of the, you know, fifth book, you know, at the end of the fifth movie. In the end of the fifth book, there was a great apology, about what happened. And then the fifth movie, not so much. Sixth movie opening, not really an apology or anything. You know, you really don't have anything like rebuilding that bridge that was lost in Order of the Phoenix, which in the book there really was. So I think because of that, that's why I'm not happy with Dumbledore. Not saying I didn't like him. Like I said, I like this movie. I like it a lot more than, you know, Order of the Phoenix. And I'm glad David Yates is doing it, because I'm excited to see what he's going to do for Deathly Hallows. Gambon, on the other hand, I don't think brought as much as he could have, but at the same time, it might not all be him. You know, he finally read the script, which has him deaf, and that's kind of like the end of his character.
Well,
and he's read his character, you know?
Regardless of what he brought, I know that he brought two things, and that was two tears from Laura and me in one scene.
He gave you that.
Yeah.
When he made Laura and I bawl like little girls.
Well, I didn't
I
bawl.
Yeah, you did.
Bawled.
Well, okay. Laura just... just bear with me here, please.
Laura, he doesn't want to sound like he was more of a girl than you were.
Yeah, and...
he was crying more than you were. Because we all know you're a big crybaby.
I totally am. No, I actually kind of am. No, I shed some tears, but I made sure, because I was sitting next to Andrew, so I, like, only cried on the right side of my face.
I didn't, like...
So that,
you know, I understand.
So that Andrew wouldn't look over and laugh at me.
Well, while we're talking about this, the first time I saw it, I teared up when we saw the real memory between Slughorn and Teenage Riddle, because that was like, for me, it was like, oh my god, this is it. This is what's setting up the final 2.5 films we're about to watch. Like, that was the beginning of the end. And that's the first time you hear the word Horcruxes, and it was pretty intense, I thought.
Yeah.
Micah, did you cry at any point?
No,
I know you're
you.
You're a bit of a crybaby, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big crybaby.
No, but seriously, be honest here. Did you shed any tears?
No, actually, I didn't. And if one scene, though, that would have gotten to me, it would have been the scene that when Slughorn was telling the story about Lily.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty sad.
Oh, yeah. And also when Harry was giving Dumbledore the potion.
Yes.
That was awful.
That moved me the second time, I must say.
That was a really good scene, and it really captured the chapter in the book as
well. Yeah, it did. It was very loyal to the chapter. Okay, Micah, do you want to talk about the next point?
Sure. Part of my problem with Half-Blood Prince, even though I really did like it a lot, was that I thought they made Snape's true allegiance a little bit too obvious.
Yes.
And I just want to know what you guys thought.
Well, with
about
one
that.
In particular. What scene?
A lot of them.
Yeah.
What stands out? Maybe when Snape tells Harry, shh.
No. I think the biggest scene was when he was telling Dumbledore that he doesn't want to do this anymore. Don't you think you ask too much?
Yeah, that was lifted straight out of book seven too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, exactly. It was. I mean, it was great that it was kind of foreshadowing from the scene in Snape's memory, but I think it may have just been a little bit too early for the audience.
Well, let's remember though, how many people didn't know that Snape was good as of the end of Half-Blood Prince? Everybody knew that Snape was going to turn out to be good.
But they loved to debate about it because there was just as much evidence to point both ways, technically.
Technically, but most people kind of took the side that, no, Snape's going to turn out to be good.
Well, of course.
It wasn't a shock that he turned out to be good. What was a shock was that he actually loved Harry's mother. And I think that's what they're going to play at more in the next movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The movie after the next movie.
I guess the biggest thing, maybe it didn't come from Snape, came from Dumbledore when he says, Severus, please. There was no... he wasn't nervous at all. He wasn't scared. It was almost like he was... We all know he was asking Snape to kill him.
Yeah, and it looked like he was asking him to kill him too.
Exactly. And that's the thing. You didn't walk away from it saying, oh man, Snape just killed Dumbledore. Now there's all this impending doom that's about to come. And
well,
I guess you
same...
know that from reading the book, but...
Yeah. The thing is, we're looking at it as, you know, people who have read the books. I would be interested to speak to somebody who had never read them, because you could be looking at an entirely different perspective.
Yeah. And, you know, like, my family members, my mom, brother, and sister, they all went to see this, and they if I asked them a question like Snape's allegiance, they wouldn't have any idea what I was talking about, but they really enjoyed the film, and I think it connects so much this film, because it's so funny. There's so many funny moments, but at the same time there's dark stuff, so this really is a perfect film whether you're a big Harry Potter fan or not. And I know that totally doesn't relate to what we're just discussing, but
no, it does. Like, my dad and my mom called me, you know. And my dad never goes to see the Harry Potter films, but my mom somehow talked him into going to go see it. And my dad called me the next day, super excited about it, and saying, oh, I'm sure you already saw it, blah, 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 blah. But he was just saying that. He's like, and he even mentioned that, you know, Snape, you know, killed, you know, Dumbledore. He's a bad guy. My dad thinks that. And I'm not going to ruin it for him if he sees the next movie. If he doesn't see it, I'll probably tell him if he asks. But, you know, it's one of those things where, it's for people who aren't into the books like we are. It's a great film. My parents loved it. My dad, who's never seen, he may have seen some of the other ones while I'm watching them when I was at their house, but, you know, he enjoyed the movie. Just coming into this is like his
first film. It's great to hear. It's great to see non-Potter fans really enjoying it.
I was going to say the only other thing I would add from the whole Snape thing was that the end scene with Harry, when he's telling Bellatrix to leave him alone, and, you know, Snape could have easily captured Harry at that point and taken him with him. So, I just think, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe the average moviegoer...
But it was the same in the book, too.
Yeah, but it was kind of anticlimactic when Snape goes, I am the Half-Blood Prince. It just... That didn't seem kind of out of place.
It's what he said in the book.
No, but it wasn't really, though. He was kind of like shouting at him, too.
It really didn't mean anything to the movie, I didn't think. Oh, you're the Half-Blood Prince. What does that really mean? It means nothing.
Well, I think the problem with that was they didn't go into the whole thing about Snape being a Half-Blood and also the meaning of prince. Not necessarily that he was actually a prince, but that it was his mother's maiden name.
Yeah.
They didn't go into any of that.
The whole Lily backstory, too.
Yeah. And he didn't really seem very sensitive when he called him coward in the movie either, because he didn't say, like, don't call me coward.
Exactly. I was really pissed.
Me too.
Out.
Me too.
Yeah. They left it wide open twice.
Yeah. Very strange. I mean, it would not have, obviously, it would not have been hard to include those lines, so I don't know. Good question for Heyman or the director, David Yates. But go on, Micah.
Did you guys feel that there was too much information left out as far as Horcruxes are concerned? There was no memory going back to Hepzibah Smith where he would have learned about the cup. There really wasn't a whole lot of backstory on the ring. You got maybe about 30 seconds seeing it, and there was no shot of the diadem in the Room of Requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's also no indication of the locket too from Order of the Phoenix.
Right, they never included that back in movie five.
Yeah, they didn't. But I don't know. I feel like this is going to be one of those things, since the Deathly Hallows film is going to be so long. Kind of, you know, how they were lifting stuff from book 7 and putting it in this movie in terms of foreshadowing. I think they'll probably lift some of the Horcrux stuff and put it into 7. Just so that
the story... That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Just so that the story kind of goes together. Because the Horcrux thing is very complicated if you think about it. And if you think about the average moviegoer, they might get confused if you explain too much about it in movie 6 and then just jump into it in movie 7 with no explanation.
Yeah, but the biggest problem is there isn't even any hypothesizing from Dumbledore as to what he thought the Horcruxes were. So how does Harry even... And I know they can write this in easily, but something like Nagini was something mm-hmm. that was suggested by Dumbledore to Harry, and also that some of the items may come from other heads of house that... you know what I'm saying? There wasn't that dialogue between the two of them.
Yeah.
Right. Well, there also is that part at the beginning of Deathly Hallows where the trio receive things from Dumbledore. And it could just easily be sort of explained away, like, in a letter or something along those lines, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've been standing, you know, I have a similar opinion of like Laura's. I think they're just going to write in one or two extra lines to set up whatever they missed in the past films, and that'll be that. Really quick stuff. They can. They're smart.
They don't have a choice at this point.
Right.
They have to.
There is no next movie.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. They did it just like Laura said, to make, you know, again, like I said about my dad seeing this movie. It's, you know, they need each film to stand off on their own. And if they explained way too much in this film about Horcruxes, which this film was a lot, the book was a lot about Horcruxes. If they put it in that, if they didn't put it in that next film, people coming to it for the first time, second time, may not remember, may not, you know, follow along. We will, but the average moviegoer won't. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, we talked a little bit about it, but do you think that aside from the Horcrux stuff, that they set up Deathly Hallows well enough?
I think they did. I mean, they really leave the movie open. I think this movie was the one in particular where they leave it really open-ended at the end. It doesn't end on a happy moment, you know, nobody's giving Hagrid a standing ovation, nothing cheesy where Harry and Hermione are flying on Buckbeak, you know, stupid stuff like that. They just let, I mean, yeah. while cute, it was stupid. You know, they just let it go. They just left it wide open.
Yeah.
Laura?
Laura. Go ahead, Laura.
What I liked about the way they ended it was, I remember a quote from J.K. Rowling when Half-Blood Prince was published, and she said that to her, Half-Blood Prince and Deathly Hallows felt like two halves of the same novel. Mm. And that's the whole impression I got of this movie, was it was kind of like the first Lord of the Rings film, where like it just sort of left off, and you knew that there was more story there. You know, it wasn't complete yet. And that's what I really liked about it.
That's what I thought, too. It really felt like a part one. This is the real part one, Deathly Hallows.
Yeah, I really agree with Laura on this. It seemed to me like, I know Mikey's going to like this, but it was like The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah!
of the Harry Potter films. It definitely just left off to where, like, pretty much they got, like, the biggest blow they could possibly get was Dumbledore's death, and now they have to act from there.
Let's move on to our listener tweets to wrap up our Half-Blood Prince discussion. On our Twitter, which is at twitter.com/MuggleCast, we asked you guys to send in your thoughts about the film. And here's some of them. Kale Cal writes, "Do you think when Voldemort gave Draco the mission, he also gave him his suit from Order of the Phoenix? Seriously, Draco, wear your school robes." That's a good point. I didn't notice that before. Draco and Voldemort were in the same thing, and when Voldemort's in the train station and Draco's on the train.
Yeah, that's funny.
That is funny. Maybe they're trying to make him look similar, to make him look just as eerie, or I don't know. Maybe it's a David Yates touch. Next feedback, Ace Loves You says, Half-Blood Prince was second only to Prisoner of Azkaban, and only because I was sad they cut out Dumbledore's funeral. Were you guys sad they cut out Dumbledore's funeral?
When I heard about it originally, I was not happy, but in the context of the film, I was fine with it.
Yeah, they still paid tribute.
Yeah.
And it was a touching tribute.
They could have shown the white tomb, though, I felt, because it's going to play a role in the next
film. Instead of his straight-up dead body just laying there. I mean, you know, they could have showed both his dead... You know when his body's on the ground?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe instead of the wands all being, you know, raised into the air for that, they could have done it for the white tomb, but whatever. Next tweet is from Angela KH522. Having Harry just wait below the tower, fully mobile, made no sense. Why did they veer from the book? What did you guys think about that? When Harry was on the lower level of the tower, so he looked up and saw Dumbledore.
I think they filmed the first part, they filmed all these scenes and realized, oh crap, we didn't have Harry carry the invisibility cloak. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that if they put Harry under the invisibility cloak again, with a Petrificus Totalus, you know, frozen there also, again, it would be too much for the movie. To the point where it's that now, why is Harry always getting, you know, why is Harry always hiding under here? You know, it would have made Harry's character seem weaker than he is.
Yeah. They already used their one opportunity.
Yeah, they used it once, and I think by using it again, it would be an overuse of that. You know, again, the movie is not the book. And they showcase all different sorts of magic. And I think by Dumbledore saying, you have to follow my orders, I want you to do this, I think it kind of shows Harry's character. You know? It shows Harry's character as a, you know, following what Dumbledore asked.
I agree. And I felt that that's the reason why they could get away with it, was because they had that whole scene with Harry and Dumbledore where Dumbledore told him what Mikey just said.
Yeah.
Basically, you're going to do what I tell you to do.
Yeah, and I think it was also symbolic how Harry was looking up at Dumbledore, and Dumbledore was above him, and the same thing of how you're going to listen to what I say. So, and I thought it was kind of touching seeing Harry looking up at him, and Dumbledore looks down real quick.
One last look before he falls 5,000
feet. Before he becomes a new Tower ride at Universal Studios.
Okay, a couple more tweets. Ross Turner 32 says, awesome movie, not sure if it was the best. I thought it still deserved PG-13. Ollivander 110 said, loved Half-Blood Prince. Wish we would have seen the diadem in the Room of Requirement, but loved the changes, the Quidditch, and Slughorn and Lavender. Kathleen 91 says, I loved Half-Blood Prince, but I think there needed to be more about the Horcruxes. And we talked about that earlier. X-Megan 218 says, I was sad that they didn't include the I'm not scared, Harry, I'm with you line in the cave scene. That was a big one they cut out.
Yeah, I was sad about that, too.
Yeah.
But where would they put that? I mean, it was kind of...
Oh, they could have easily... they could have easily just had Harry holding Dumbledore up saying, don't worry, sir, don't worry, you know, something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't really talk about Quidditch at
all,
though.
Quidditch was awesome.
Quidditch, it was gorgeous. I cannot wait to see that in Blu-ray. Oh, my God, the special effects in this movie. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
There was a lot of suggestive... material at certain
yes,
times.
Yes, there were.
Quidditch
yes,
tryouts.
There were. I mean, it's they're growing up. I mean, that's how it would be in Hogwarts. I mean, maybe Joe didn't write it, but you know it's happening there. Cormac McLaggen.
Yeah.
That guy, he's a stud. He's got a hit on the hotties like Hermione.
He's an underwear model, from what I understand.
Yes, he is. Yeah, what's his real name? Oh, Freddie Stroma. If you guys like Cormac McLaggen in the film, the guy who plays Cormac McLaggen, Freddie Stroma, search for him on YouTube. He does this underwear dance for God knows what, but yeah, just watch it. You'll love him even more. Jen Bonstein says, loved it, but no big battle in the end? They just walk into the forest? WTF? I wish there was some battle. Were you guys disappointed there was no battle?
No.
I was.
Well, Well, didn't we kind of knew about this for a while, though, so...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it was a big shock.
Yeah, they said they didn't want it to be too repetitive with movie 7, so... Ika Po, however you pronounce that, says, love the mood of the film, great cinematography, some of the night scenes were beautiful. Great acting, especially from Rickman. Zoe Deer says, the film was sexed up and dumbed down version of the book, but funny. J.L. Mincy says, I thought it was great until Snape shushed Harry on the astronomy tower. But, I mean, what do you think the deal was with that, guys?
I think you know what it was. I think it's one of those things where it also put in light that Harry trusts Snape, and he trusts what Snape was about to do. And then, obviously, in the end, Harry, you know, says, WTF, what was that? And runs after him. But I think it's one of those things where it's like, he trusts Snape at that moment in time.
I mean, he never really ever thought that Snape was a bad guy, except in the first movie. But then it turned out he was actually trying to save him. So there is a little bit of trust there when it comes to him and, I guess, Dumbledore.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it just shows, you know, I think it's also meant to make the fact that Snape goes from that, you know, telling Harry to hang out, I'm going to take care of this, to end up killing Dumbledore. I think it's supposed to be like a bigger shocker for Snape's character. Again, for the people that haven't read the books.
Yeah. You know,
it's a perspective thing you have to think about.
And a final tweet today from Matt Odd. He says, I loved it. The Unbreakable Vow was brilliant and perfect. The story moved smoothly, and we saw the characters in a different light. I agree. The Unbreakable Vow was very cool.
It was very, very well done.
Yeah.
Bellatrix was spot on. Snape was spot on. Narcissa was spot on. So, wonderful. So, look, that concludes our Half-Blood Prince discussion for today. I'm sure there will be much more. But this segment lasted a lot longer than we planned, which is great. We had some other segments planned for today's show, but we will save them for sometime next week because we want to put out another episode sometime next week to celebrate our 4-year anniversary, which is on August 7th. Yeah. So we'll save the other stuff for next week, and we'll just wrap up the show today. All right. This doesn't happen very often.
Well, I hope we'll wrap up the show today.
Well...
I wasn't planning on recording for another 3 hours.
Oh, Micah. Silly you. Okay, well, before we let you guys go, let's remind you all about our contact information. Visit the MuggleCast website for all you need concerning the show. You can call in a voicemail, you can Skype in a voicemail, and you can also email in your feedback. These days, we really rely on your email to read on the show. As you saw today, we read emails and we read tweets, too. Speaking of tweets, the MuggleCast Twitter is one of the highlights of the MuggleCast community. You can follow us on Twitter by going to twitter.com/MuggleCast. You can also fan us on Facebook and subscribe to us on iTunes, don't forget. And also vote for us once a month on Podcast Alley. I think now... Let me just look into something real quick. Can you go to... you can now go to facebook.com/MuggleCast. You got a nice, handy URL now to become a fan of the show. So we have close to 7,000 fans there on Facebook, and you can become a fan just by going to facebook.com/MuggleCast. We also have other community outlets. We got our MySpace, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, and the fan listing in the forums over at mugglecastfan.net. So that's it.
Oh, wait.
It's been a lot of fun. What?
We have a new P.O. Box number, too.
Oh, we have a new P.O. Box number, too. Laura, give it to us.
That's P.O. Box 1752, Cumming, Georgia, 30028.
You can send in handwritten mail, or you can send Laura treats, you know, like home-baked goods, whatever you want to the wonderful town of Cumming, Georgia. All right. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Matt Britton.
And I'm Mikey B.
We'll see you next week for episode 178 to celebrate our 4-year anniversary. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.